Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison and to our listeners on WIDE LP. Our speaker today is John Elegant, who worked for the People's Action for Rural Awakening in India in 2003 to 2005. He's going to be talking to us today about the Dalit struggle for human rights. John.
Thank you. First of all, I just wanted to show you some pictures. So I will also pass. The calendar I just wanted to show you is, he is the father Thomas Palitani, one who is appointed as assistant or the director for the Dalit movement. He did not want to include himself like as a president because he is also a priest. So it's like too much of burden to be a whole president for like a 3-4 states. So he himself wanted to be an assistant to help the president, who was the Nelaya, the Dalit movement. President is known as the Nelaya, which Bob was knowing the name before. So he's in the calendar was printed when he had 25 years of his priesthood. Yeah, and he, in the social service, 25 years. It's very simple, it's nothing, When 25 years are there, you do more than a piece of paper printing his face. And this is the Parak, the building, which started in 1992. There was only a small hut in 1992 here. Later on, when they had a fund, they are funded from the Bread for the World in Germany. You might have heard about the funding from the Bread for the World from Germany. So they could be able to construct this building, which is now heart of all South Indian activities. Goes on there. Everybody reaches from the 5-6 states to come here, for organizing themselves, how to go about dealing with the human rights for Dalits. So we had this idea, that we should do something for 25 years of his priesthood in social service. What can we do? We thought, to print this, me and my four more friends were there. So we thought we almost got fired from the job. Because we know that he doesn't like this. He doesn't want any publicity. The famous people are very simple people. Believe that. So, when he came to know how many people are included, if I was alone, I would have gone. But there were like 5-6 people, so okay. He was a little mad, but, he was also happy internally that there is something being done. So this is 2005 calendar that we just printed in his memory of his priesthood. I just wanted to show you those. Yeah. So even this picture that was posed was like, his hand was like, it's like some problem with the hand. He did not want a nice picture to post. We asked the father, please turn back. Then we just took the picture. he did not even want to have a nice pose of a picture. He knows something is happening, These people are going to do something for me. So he did not want to give any picture. So the organization started in 1992, as I said. I just wanted to give a background of there was a cyclone. You might have heard in 1992 that two districts were swept out in Andhra Pradesh. All the trees were uprooted because of the cyclone. There was very bad cyclone they had. So in that time, there were a lot of Dalits went without the houses. The houses of Dalits, how they are formed, with the thatched leaves and all. The thatched leaves, houses, huts. So huts flew away. There was nothing was on the ground the next day. Only some walls were found, or empty ground was found. But there were people also, like very generous people, They just wanted to give something to the people, those who lost. But if there is nobody is organizing, where does this fund and everything goes? Goes into one or two rich people, that's it. everybody likes to grab something there. So at that time, he was also the rector of one of the Don Bosco schools, English medium, located in Rawalpindi, it is known as. Then he thought he should come up and do something, organize certain things, get the fund accumulated, blankets or the bed sheets, whatever people are able to give from different countries or different states of, you know, India, have an equal distribution. That is the point of starting. Equal distribution can be done only when we organize things, otherwise it's a mess again going to, you know. So they started the building and brought all the things there and sharing to the people. Then later on, when they had the fund, they constructed a bigger building and they had the other branches. It expanded into the branches. So it's mainly in the Andhra Pradesh. I just wanted to show you where is the Andhra Pradesh. I outlined with the pen. Okay, the state that started, it also spread to all the South India. Half of down of India is known as South India. Top, we call it North India. So the pen outline is a state that started the human rights movement.
Andhra Pradesh. What language is spoken there?
Yeah, it's mainly spoken Telugu. Andhra, they talk Telugu. Yeah, Telugu is a local language. But they talk Hindi as a main language too, because that's a national language. And it's Hyderabad is very close to us, so all the metropolitan cities talk Hindi. Because everybody intermingles in the metropolitan cities. Not as the villages, nobody. They know only proper their own language. Yeah.
Does everybody know some English or?
Not the local people actually. When you take common people, nobody knows English. Yeah. But one who is organizing everybody knows English to communicate with. And the photos I have still is when I was working with the children there, Dalit children, and there are some activities. Dr. Ambedkar's picture you can see in some pictures. They are the activities that properly for the human rights, you know, fighting for the rights.
Could you tell us a little bit about the Dalit people and why they're at the bottom of the heap?
Yeah, I'm just coming to that actually. The Dalit people, Dalits are mostly known as, you know, they are Christians, they are born Christians, the Dalits. So they're almost the working class.
Do they have any relation to the untouchables?
They are. So
yeah, they are known as untouchables there by the different people because they are already poor. Yeah, so they are considered as untouchables and lower caste people who don't have much money. So what these organizations realized is that why are they known as untouchables? Why are they not respected in the society? Because the land is playing the main important fact, you know. Those who have more land are known as landlords, isn't it? Is always respected so much. I don't know about here, but one who has land is, he is always none like that.
Well, we've done well.
Yeah. So Father Thomas and, you know, Nilaya and all those famous figures organized the Dalits movement. They found out the land, which is not used, neither by people nor by the government. So they traced out certain lands, like 200 acres, 500 acres, that just left like a meadows, you know. Then they thought, okay, this land has to be used. And also they also found out that certain lands in the hands of the landlords are illegal. They don't have any papers. If you don't have paper, if I come to know, I'll grab you from tomorrow. That's my right, because you can't do anything to me. Isn't it? So that's the logic that they just wanted to go on. So they traced out into the, you know, some intellectual people are there. Otherwise they don't organize certain bigger organizations if they're not smart. They have lawyers in them. He is also a lawyer. Forgot to say, Father Thomas, which you saw in the picture, also is a lawyer. He thought, if I wanted to do, or if I wanted to help Dalits, being priest is not enough. Being priest is okay, just bless the people and ask them to live a good life, that's it. But I want to do more than that. So I have to include myself in politics. I have to be a lawyer to know what is, you know. So he studied the law and started tracing out the barren lands which government doesn't care to give to the poor, and which are in the hands of the landlords, which don't have papers. So they almost traced like 500 to 1,000 acres of the land. 1 year, I think they might have taken a census. Then they started fighting. One day, you know, going and encroaching into the lands. They said, next year there is no more planting in this crop, in this land, because that's not yours. That's how the land, you know, the landlords realized that, okay, what we do is not correct. That means we have to, you know, be a little more cruel to these Dalits, suppress them, that they don't realize their rights. So in that way, the struggle between the landlords and the Dalits started, because they are being educated. When I started my job, you know, once they gave me the job there, the next day I found a guy there sitting in the porch of the Para institution. Then I asked him, what is his problem? That was a holiday, he just came, it's Sunday, nobody works. Then he told me, sir, I have like a 2 acres of land. I don't know how I got it. In between the land of the one of the rich guy, 2 acres, this poor guy had in between like 150 acres of that. Okay. Maybe 5 acres, I think this guy had. So what that landlord started, you know, conspiracy is that if I just go on giving this guy the land, the water, irrigation, he will never sell me this land or never leave this land out. So the next year onwards, he stopped giving him irrigation. There is no more water for this 5 acres of the land for him, which he used to produce grain and all, you know, rice. He can't produce that anymore. He doesn't want to sell it because he has a son. He just handed on to give something to his son when he grows. So only the solution for him is to sell it. You know? So that's why he came and he was asking for the help and the case which they have undertaken from the Para to fight that. It's not the way to go, because he has a right. You know, right to produce in his, or right to get the water, or because to put the, you know, pump, water pump is very expensive, like they're about like 2,500 bucks. Whereas a rich person is afford to have it and he has, and he doesn't supply, and he cannot, for 5 acres, he can't produce that much money. So that's how the struggle just started in the East Godavari district.
Were you able and, to help them?
What's that? Yeah, I think the you know, it's a law, so it goes on like years. They don't settle very fast there. You have to always go to the court, you have to always run behind the lawyers. Yeah, there are many cases, so they don't settle it very fast. That's the thing. Nobody wants to get into the hands of court. Yeah, even the house we have, one of the neighbor bought in front of my house, and he started climbing half of my front yard. I don't know how he started claiming that. Then my father was upset. We have this house and the land is ours. How can she come up with that? Then we thought of not leaving it, you know. Then we thought of fighting. It's about 7 years. He's still going to the court. Yeah, my father's still going to the court. Sometimes he wins, but they are come up more strong and they go to the high court. Yeah, if you are not denied, if you are denied here, there is higher court for you. High court denies, there is Supreme Court.
I think the term red tape actually came from colonial British in India, because you see all these records, and they all have red tape on them. And so what we're talking about is red tape.
Yeah, they are the local courts in one state that denies. There is a high court in the capital, like Madison should have a high court. You know, if Madison denies high court, you can go to like Washington D.C. Supreme Court. This case can be transported because, but they want to fight for that. So that's the final. If they deny or they give you, is the final is the Supreme Court. So that's how you have to spend because of that guy, because you don't want to leave that. You know. So it's a long process that nobody wants. Only 1 acre of land. Oh, I just give him. I don't have money to pay to the lawyer. That's how things end up. You know. Yeah. So. And as I said.
John, is this a kind of a demonstration?
Yeah, that's a demonstration for, you know, when...
That was for land rights.
Land rights, that's a land rights.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's very easy to organize. People is very fast. You can organize in overnight. Because they know that, you know, we have to go because we have no way. We have to go and fight so that our children will have a good future. So I'll go for the demonstration. So you see that thousands and thousands of people in overnight, you can organize. I don't think anywhere it will happen. They will ask, what is the use?
Could they ever get land reform through the government?
Yeah, I think there are certain people also got their lands now. Yeah, that's how the success shows the hope. You know. Yeah.
How did the school get started? Where did they start their school at Parham?
Oh, the...
Most of the clients coming into Paro had children who were in child labor, and so then father, I think, realized that the children needed to get out of that situation and to get an education. So most of the children you see in these pictures are Dalit children. In Dalit, it means oppressed, so it's the same as untouchable. It's just they feel like we're not untouchables, we're oppressed people, so they prefer to be called Dalit people.
Terminology different in different parts of India?
I think it's the same as
same, yeah.
I thought untouchables were a Hindu caste.
They were, but they're now converting to Christianity because of the religion. There's the belief in the Hinduism where the Brahmins, the upper caste, are from God's head. And then you have the Kshatriyas, which are the warrior caste, or the political figures are from God's arms. And then the Shudras come from God's, or arms of the... Vaishryas come from God's stomach, and they're office people. And the Shudras come from God's feet, and that caste is known as like the farmers and merchants. And then the untouchables are not even a part of God, so they're seen as below that image. So that comes from the Hinduism, whereas as in Christianity, it's teaching them you're all equal. So many of them are converting now to Christianity.
Is that system actually still a legal system?
It's illegal, but it's still practiced.
That's what I mean. It is illegal government-wise,
mm-hmm.
but
yeah.
People still do it.
But it's still part of the culture.
Yeah.
Something I didn't understand. We were there. There was a statue of somebody who was a great leader of the Dalits, and somebody hung a thing of sandals around the neck of that statue, and there were a lot of riots. And I don't know what the symbolism was there.
See, the statue of Ambedkar. Mm-hmm. Ambedkar is... In front of every Dalit colony, there is Ambedkar.
But why the sandals? What difference does that make?
Yeah, so when there is Ambedkar's in a birthday, they just put the garland with the flowers, the Dalits?
No, it was sandals.
Okay, I'm
coming. Okay, I'm
so when they put the flowers, the Hindus are against whom the Dr. Ambedkar was fighting, you know, Dalits' rights against all this. They are really mad whenever the day comes. This is the day that these people are happy.
Mm.
You know, they get there. Like a horsepower, a power of elephant that comes to these Dalits by looking at his statue. So they want to make them, put them down, and they put the sandals. and the sandals with the garlanded with those coffins. Came to know that, but I haven't seen it.
There's a I think this is intentional. This is Ambedkar, and here the foot was these sandals. I wonder if that is an intentional thing. It's kind of because your eye falls onto the foot with the very pretty looking sandals.
Yeah, that shows that he was working for the oppressed people.
Oh, that's what it means.
Yeah. The oppressed and the...
We lived with a Catholic family there for about 2 months, and they were old time Catholics. They weren't recent converts. Dave Dodd, their name was, in Kanaka, or near Tamalata. But anyway, I talked to him about this thing, and I said, well, you can't really tell Brahmins by their name or by looking at them or anything. How do you know? And he said, well, they have a sacred thread. And I said, well, can't I just go down and get a sacred thread and then say I'm a Brahmin? And they said, well, the other Brahmins will out you. They will chase do a genealogy check until they take out and be sure that you are who you say you are. So to a foreigner, you can't make any sense. Because sometimes Brahmins are in pretty low positions. They aren't necessarily high up. It's a religious thing versus a civil thing. They could be laborers and still be Brahmins.
Is it genealogical to them?
Somehow, yeah.
This
guy felt there's with the Dalits, it was sort of like affirmative action here in the United States. The government made some programs for Dalits, and this guy said, well, other people are claiming to be Dalits and they aren't, because they want to get in on these programs. And there was resentment, just like there was for affirmative action here. And he seemed to feel that you ought to just take what fate gave you, and you shouldn't try to rise. You know, you should stay where you are. And he felt more sorry for the princely people who the government took away these million-dollar estates than he did for the Dalits, because he felt the Dalits should just simply, you know, just quit all that. And he was a Catholic. It didn't mean anything to him.
He wasn't himself.
No, he was Catholic. And that family had been Catholic for generations. They were Coptic Christians or something like that. I don't know. Is that what that is?
Yeah, Coptic Christians.
From Kerala.
Mm-hmm.
I have the statistics paper too. Now I'll just pass around.
Why don't you review what's on the
statistics? Yeah.
This is terrible. The things in here. Mm-hmm. You should leave through it. State violence.
Yeah, there's a lot of horrible violent crimes that are committed against the Dalit people, and just to give you an idea of where they fall, over 57% of Dalit children under the age of 4 years old are undernourished, and there's a very low infant mortality rate compared to those who are non-Dalits. Education enrollment, Dalits 16%, for non-Dalits 83% in the school systems. National dropout rates for Dalits, for primary age students, is 49% will drop out. Middle is 67%, and secondary is over 77%. So, John, luckily, the school that he worked at, the children, they were there for 1 year, and they had to live at the school for a year, and that was something when I came and did volunteer work. I thought, oh, gosh, it's so terrible. They have to live at the school. They're away from their families. But he said if they don't do that, they'll just run away. And some did run away, and at one point, I remember John was looking for him, and we found him selling food in the village again, his family, you know, and I don't think he did come back. Some of them I saw, they did come back. Some I never saw them again. But I was happy to hear that after I left, two of the older students who were once in child labor stayed at the school for the year. They completed their work, and they're now in college. So a lot of these children were put back into the regular school system and are still there today, luckily. Women, though, this is something that I was mainly interested in, and then John can tell you about an organization that was formed for the women there. But they typically are the last in the family to take any food, so as a result, there's a low calorie and protein intake for them, a lot of starvation. Women have a higher dropout rate compared to the boys because there's a greater need for them to do agricultural work. They do more than 80% of the agricultural work, actually, in India. Wow. He's against them. And what I just found it just terrible for the women, because they're not only going against the whole issue of you know, gender discrimination, but also because they're deleted, so it's like they're getting it twice as hard. So that I found to be a terrible thing. You can talk about that system. That was something that Father Apollyon first told me about.
The deputy. Are the deletes more in the agrarian part of India?
Oh, yeah. Is there an area where there are more deletes in?
So I heard that the wealth of India was being more centralized around urban areas.
Every city has a Dalit colony, you know. They have divided into, like, colonies type. So Dalits are in one side of the town, you can see, where they also go to the church.
But there's segregation in the village.
Yeah, segregation, but they also intermingle with the people, you know, because if they don't intermingle, who will work for those who have the land?
I was wondering if this was more overall effect of the money being more, like I said, in the urban centers of India than they are, say, in the back, you know, the agrarian side, whether they're the leader or anyone else.
Was anything done to support financially families that lost their children's labor?
Yeah, that's what the question every parent used to ask me whenever I go to their house. They used to ask me, "You grabbed my son from the work, so what is the income I get?" So I say, "How much money your son makes to feed you? You know, do you want to live on your son's wages when he's like 7-8 years old?" You know?
Is there any legal requirement for public education up to a certain age?
Yeah, below 14 years, if any kid works, is known as illegal child labor. So every owner, one who gives them job, is supposed to be in prison. So many people are not even giving them jobs, but, you know, they were also trying to give them so that they need not to pay too much of the money, too much of the wages. If they hire, like, elderly person, they have to pay too much. So if they, like washing dishes in a restaurant, you know, how much do they pay to a small boy? Yeah, whereas if they hire the professional, how much do they have to pay? So that's how they are totally messing up the whole world.
When we were looking for children for the school that we were at, we went to a village, and you could see as you came into the village, you saw, met the head man, and it was by our standards, it was pretty awful, but it was whitewashed, and then further on was the untouchable section, and it was just all run down and busted up, and so I asked them, I said, well, why don't these people, you know, fix their places up? And they say, well, the others watch them, and if they start to fix things up, then they burn them out. And the interesting thing was, we wanted to get four-year-old children, and a lot of them, you know, didn't have any papers. So they said, if you can reach your hand over your head and touch your ear, then you're 6 years old. Because your head is big when you're a little child.
Okay.
And so if they could do that, then they were too old.
So here, one more thing I just wanted to present is that when they started the organization to the Dalit movement, they thought that if they concentrate only on one thing, they're not going to get the support of people. Like, people have different problems, you know. The children are a problem for the Dalits. Husband is a problem. Finance is a problem. Land is a problem. So if you concentrate on, okay, we are here to help you with the land, the kids are child laborers. Husband is a drunkard. So all those factors will put them down. So that's how they came together and they started all these helping organizations, you know, the small branches. Like a women's organization they started called MACS. That's called the Mutually Aided Cooperative Society. Mutually Aided Cooperative, so mutually they themselves, you know.
So it's a co-op movement.
What is that?
It's the co-op movement.
Yeah, cooperative movement. Whereas father used to bring money, you know, because he used to bring from the foreign and give to the women to share, give the loans to the women on who is interested, on who has capacity to start something. Not that I can't give you simply money. If I give, the next day also you will come. And you will not do anything with that money. You will just. But if I ask you, I'll give you the money if you only start a business, then you will start thinking when you go home, what should I do to increase my money? If you do that, you'll be given more. Yeah, you spend, I give you 10,000, if you make 10,000 more in next year and come and show me, I'll give you 20,000 loan. So that's how the Max movement started. And women started their own, like, making pickle, cooking something in the house and selling it to the shops, you know? There are small business that women can do. You know,
is this suddenly the idea of the Grameen banks where loans mm-hmm. are made to the women, not
yeah,
to the
yeah,
men?
Yeah, yeah, and even the banks used to get angry on us because mm-hmm. there are banks too, but then we ask, how much interest rates are you giving to these poor women? Mm-hmm. If we give like 10%, they are giving only like 4%. So you go below that, then they will come to you. So they were mad because their business is down, bank business is down. What can we do? Because we are trying to help, we are not trying to sue them. Yeah. So the officers were angry with us sometimes at all. Yeah. Because nobody was going to collect the loan from them.
They don't like competition?
Yeah. So the and another thing, so that's one branch to help their finances. So other one, as I was sharing with you about the school, you know, child labor school, collecting the child labors and sending them to the schools so that they won't go back to their parents for the money, or we ourselves give them everything paid off. And everything is given. So that they will remain in the school unless they finish their education. So that's
the two that went on to college, do you know what they went into?
The college?
The two that went on to college?
Yeah, I think they are still studying in the college, the higher education.
You know what they're studying?
Mechanics?
I think.
Something with machines or something like that.
Yeah, they just wanted to study, you know, mechanics, because there are jobs available for the mechanics, those who know how to repair a car or those things. Mm-hmm. It's a profession.
Is there any progress being made in stopping the use of young girls, basically children in the area of prostitution?
Yeah, that's the
Devadasi
system, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know Father Polly had said that they did stop. They found out. It's not practiced. I mean, it's practiced, but it's hidden if it is practiced. You don't see it very often. I don't know if you've come across it. But that's where the temple prostitution where the temple priestess, where she'll pick a young girl to become she's supposed to represent the goddess, I think, of the temple. But it's always a poor, delete girl. And then at that point, she's the temple prostitute, where then the temple priest can basically do whatever they want with her, and she has no other life. Her whole life is that entirely. Is dedicated to the temple. And I remember Father Thomas said that there was one they heard about and they were able to stop it before it happened. Mm-hmm. But I asked him that. I said, why is it, if you consider the women unclean, why would the priest want to be with these women? And he says they're unclean to everybody else, but when it comes to basically a rape situation, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Our school was way out in the middle of nowhere, about an hour and a half maybe from Bangalore, on what they call a jeepable road, which is a bunch of potholes. But I was there during construction, and they had whole families, of course, the construction workers, and they lived in, it looked like a pup tent, only it was with banana leaves, and the children were there, and the women, and the grandparents, and children all worked, they had little hammers, and they broke up bricks in order to make aggregate, and you thought, well, they should, and I finally got to thinking, well, why not? What else are they going to do? There's no school there, and there's no school bus, and who's going to come and take these kids to school? And it seemed like everybody sort of worked according to what they could do. The women quite often carried on their heads, they would carry concrete and pour it in the forums and things. And their grandparents would take care of the real little children, and the other children seemed to work according to their physical ability. You know, they didn't seem to be slaves, they all seemed to be pretty... I never understood how it all worked, but I couldn't see any other option for these kids. You might as well do something useful, otherwise they just get in trouble. So I changed my attitude because I had to have a school bus.
That sounds more like they're all doing something together, though. Doesn't sound like kids just don't to be exposed.
In this case, they weren't. No, because we were way out there was no place to go. It's 30 acres out in the middle of the field full of snakes and scorpions and stuff. So
Sean has a question.
Is any of the wealth that I read about India is generating now being filtered into the agrarian more parts of India, like infrastructure building or anything like that, or just not getting out there at all? You hear about how the economy of India is growing, you know, and all that other stuff. This money is being generated by this economy being filtered through, you know, the more less urban areas being, you know, increased in their infrastructure, roads, say, et cetera.
Yeah, I think it's mostly coming through their land. Those who have the land are now, it's being taxed by the government. You know, they are more taxed, and the money is used when for the poor. Yeah, for the education and all those things are used. So that's how they just share between
them.
Some money getting there, but most of it's around.
Yeah. It's only. That's why the poor becomes poor there because they're not able to equally distribute between poor and the rich.
I guess for me, when I started struggling with this idea from an American perspective, I remember asking Father, you know, how could the system be in place? This is just absolutely ridiculous. And he just sat back and he said, well, it's sort of like what the people in America are doing to the African Americans, isn't it? And I thought, oh, you're right. And he says, have you ever had a black president? I said, no. And he says, how are they? Yeah. and he's like, you've never had a female as a president, as a leader of your country? And he says, where are the African-American people in your city? You know, who are the ones suffering the most? And he says, it's sort of like if there's a crime that's committed, many times people think, oh, it must have been a black man who robbed that store. But he says the same thing in India, where if there's a crime committed, a rape that's committed, it's, oh, it must have been a delete. It must have been that person. So it's very similar. The struggles are very similar, where there are posters of Martin Luther King Jr. In Para, because they really revere his movement. And I'm working really hard. And I said, well, a lot of the African-American in America are proud to be black, and they'll say I'm black and I'm proud, and he says the deletes are not at that point yet where they are able to come out in public and say I'm a delete and I'm proud.
Well, what I see is the difference from what I'm just hearing you and Dave speak is in the U.S. we have education throughout the country. Where Dave says in the rural areas there is no education, and one of the things that I saw last year when I was in Venezuela is one of the first things they did when someone from the lower ranks moved up to be the president is one of the first things he did was put education into the rural areas where the people lived, so they didn't have to go very far to get their education. Mm-hmm. And that's where I would think the resources need to be decentralized.
Yeah, you had to travel for your schooling. You didn't study in your village. So that's something I found, too, is pretty common where there people will stay in boarding schools. There's a lot of boarding schools in India. So there's not a lot of schools. And
yeah, there are schools in the rural. They need not to pay anything, you know. All the government provides, even their textbooks are provided, uniforms are provided. So to attract people to go to school, kids. But rarely the kids also drop down because of family problems. Yeah, so they become child labors. But most of them make use of their education too. Going to they're known as government schools, Telugu medium schools, or local language schools.
Yeah, where you're only learning your local language, but if you actually want to be successful, move on, you're going to need to know English, so that's where you need to go off to a boarding school.
Well, this is probably a stupid question, but do all the citizens in India, including the Dalits, have the right to vote?
No, everybody can. Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, that's how they are very happy whenever the elections come, you know, because they have a strong grip and all these rich politicians are reaching to their legs. So they wait for that moment. But Dalits, they are poor that they cling towards the money. You know? So when they offer some money, they are ready to manipulate their own vote system. Yeah, see.
Are there any counter organizations like we have the Ku Klux Klan here, which is doing quite a bit, but are there people fighting against that progress?
Are you fighting against the deletes from voting, or?
Giving them rights.
Are there organizations that are trying to keep them down from getting votes, or? Are they seeing a problem at the polls? Do we see problems at the polls when they go there? Are they able to freely vote, or do people try to suppress that?
Yeah, they suppress them by offering money, some liquor,
or they pay them not to.
Oh. Yeah. and they change their mind once they see some, you know, liquor bottle.
They don't know their rights well enough.
Yeah, see, that's how these organizations come up to realize their rights. You have right, that's very powerful. Right to vote, that's very powerful right. You can change your history of Dalits. So, you know, gather some Dalits and vote for the proper person. Not one who gives you the money, one who gives you, you know, different things. Because you get only once in a 5 years a right to vote. You can change it. So that's our father also. I was educating Dalits, you know, organizing some meetings for them before elections, and you know, they just wanted to. Yeah.
That's funny thing,
Maria. Indian K Society in India was even pre colonial times, pre British Empire.
K Society?
Caste.
How long is it going?
Yeah, they still have caste systems.
Was it
around
for British rule?
Yeah, from then onwards it was. Right, and they were very strong on those days, caste systems. You know, they were completely strong, and now they are just starting to intermingle too, you know. Caste systems are, as I feel it, they are slowly coming down. Yeah. Even I was born as a middle class, you know, I was not born as a Dalit. But I became a Christian. So you are Christian means you are considered as a Dalit by my own caste people, and they used to make fun of me, man. You want to change yourself as a Dalit? So, I said, what? By converting Christianity, I need not to be a Dalit. It's a faith. So, yeah, we were not excommunicated from the caste. My grandma was very strongly stood up, and we stayed. Our house was with the, you know, where there is like landlords and middle class people. So we stayed there. Nobody questioned our faith. That means they're accepting their caste, or accepting their religions. Yeah. But we don't see them just, they go and eat in the Dalit's family, you know, this landlord. But yeah, that has to still. They don't drink water from their houses and all. Yeah.
Are the Dalits marrying outside of their caste? Marrying upwards?
Yeah, I have seen certain cases when Dalits are well educated and get a nice job. The higher caste people are, you know, not proposing, but some kids, they run away.
How do the families take that?
Oh, the families, they forget about them. Completely forget about them. Unless they are like maybe 10 years old, you can come back with your kids. Then they will accept you, but not right away.
Is it a feeling as if they, the families resent it because they feel as if they've rejected the culture? Those who went away... that by going away and getting an education, then the people who remained home, do they resent it and feel that the people who went away just are rejecting the culture?
Yeah.
And I think there's a real similarity in that respect to Native American populations. The people who leave... it's probably less now than it used to be. The people who leave the tribal areas and would get educations, you know, they always were standing between two cultures, and it was, and many times resented, extremely difficult.
Yeah.
Or felt that they had betrayed.
One more example I'll tell you is my friend was there, he was teaching English. He's from the different state, came to my state, Andhra Pradesh. He's from Kerala, down below. So he started teaching English, and I don't know what happened. He eloped with one of the Brahmin girls. Yeah, she should be higher, you know, higher age. The last class is, she's not like 14 or 15, but at least like 17, 18. So it's still minor to run away like that with the girl.
There's a page here about denying women.
No.
Certain people from certain sections.
Yeah. So when he ran away, I think the bride, her parents did not come out from the house for 1 month. They were in the house, did not even come out of their staircase.
They felt so ashamed.
So ashamed, and they have nothing to do with the community because they will segregate them, you know. Yeah. So I don't know now. And people thought that they will get suicide in their house. They will hang themselves. Yeah. I don't know whether. Yeah, in many cases it happens. Yeah, because it's a shame for them, they think, you know, because my daughter ran away with the Dalit guy, they think. And the Brahmins, they don't talk with the family then. They have nothing to do with any families and, yeah.
Well, a question of education. Unitarians especially think that education is the key to everything. They think just more education, more education. Yeah. And that may not be the case, because there's a thing called the least common denominator in these third world countries. And you're looking, you see what it is that's holding you back, and that's what you ought to concentrate on. And it may not be education. You got to have roads, you got to have capital, you got to have an acceptable amount of corruption. And you look at each one of these, and you see, which one is holding us back? And that's the one you want to concentrate on. And it may not be education. It may be like India, who has a lot of educated people. They have, a lot of PhDs, and still they have a lot of problems. And if they analyze their problems, maybe more education is not the answer.
But it depends on what you mean by education. The Dalit are the ones of the very lowest class, don't know what they could do, and they can only learn it somehow, and this is by quote-unquote education. This doesn't have to
but
be
still,
upper level academic education, but
right.
Very practical down-to-earth education.
And
that's
you need
what
to
they
look
know.
At the children.
Yeah,
are you suggesting that instead of children going to school, they should work?
I'm suggesting that if you only have a limited amount of money in a country and you try to analyze where you're going to spend that money, there's other things besides that may take place that is more needed than education. Maybe education have to wait. I'm saying education is not necessarily the primary problem in any country. Some it is maybe, but not at all.
Education might not be at all, but what I saw in Venezuela was the people who were educated that had the resources and the money for years were not using that to solve the problems of the poor people in the hills.
No.
And they had big problems that I tried to think about. How are they ever going to manage to get the water, to get the roads, to get out of these hills? And I have to keep telling myself, well, now they're being educated and they will solve these problems for themselves because they're there and they know what they need the most. But if they don't have the education, they'll never get that. That's what I
think. Well, if you're educated and you don't have any money,
yeah, but I mean, this is not the general truth.
No, but even
you are not born with the facility to problem solve. You're not kids and girl children are not born with the knowledge that they don't have to be subdued and beaten and so forth. And for that, you do need a basic, simple, practical education to even just open up your brain.
Education about rights.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Let's get our speaker involved again. Yeah.
So one more question I was expecting from you is that how do the problems of the people, like human rights, or some rape has happened, or something has happened to them, how does the problem reach very fast to one organization like a partner? How does it travel? Because it's included in the whole South India, like 5-6 states. So it happens in small community, it has to reach, otherwise how do they fight? So they started an organization, the branch of PARA also is this. It's known as a DBSU. It's a Dalit Bahujan Sramik Union. Yeah, Bahujan Sramik is, working the farming. Yeah, Sramik the meaning. Yeah, Dalit Bahujan Sramik Union, DBSU. So that's the name given to the bunch of people. At least they are, good educated. So young people, they gather together. This is like a job, A father was giving the people a job. This is your job. Find out what is happening in the Dane County. That's your job. Go, just travel. Submit me the bills. Later on the idea came is that they should have a membership. You want me to be your, the union member? You want to include your family in this list? Just pay like $10 per month. So that they're also actively included, families, they know that there is somebody working for them. So if you have any problem, I'm there. If you are not a member, means you're not interested, all people can give you free service.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What about media? Anything new really is disseminated by media, and especially in a big country like
India. I think the media is always trying to, you know, mislead people. If 10 Dalits died, they just say only 2 Dalits died.
That's my question. Are there media like our public media who do sometimes really do progressive work? Does that exist in India? Progressive media who would advocate for the Dalit, for example.
Yeah,
do they exist?
Like WORT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there are also. Then only the facts are known, you know, then the actions are taken. Yeah. But the newspapers are known as very frank, you know, they can't even manipulate the situations. The newspapers, yeah. But sometimes they are. The facts are wrong. Conveyed properly there. So here, all the problems are known to one person, and he brings out to the public, and he fights for their rights. So that's how every county has got a member. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think that most of the people sitting at this table are pretty widely aware of what goes on in many nations of the world. I mean, a lot of us are well-traveled. A lot of us have spent a lot of time either in academia, learning about other countries. We have friends from many other countries. So I don't think there's anyone here that is going to take his comments as representing all of India. And I think a lot about the civil. You mentioned that Martin Luther King is well respected among the Dalits, and I'm here to hear about a population I know very little about, and because he has been there, that's why I find it interesting to me. And in no way am I going to take this one example of one population and apply it to every other population in India. But Martin Luther King was a person who has decided that we have had enough of people telling us it takes a long time. And the civil rights movement in the 1960s was an upheaval of people who had been abused and abused and abused and abused and said, enough. We've waited for the government to do something. We've waited for something to happen. We have to take it upon ourselves to challenge this. And I think that the same thing is happening in the United States with the organizations, for example, of like the National Native American Lawyers Association. I mean, there's things that are happening among various populations that if you don't, I mean, you can just wait forever for someone else to do it.
That's right.
It's not going to happen.
That's right. The people have to recognize what they need and organize to accomplish those goals.
Yeah.
But it takes some people to get the whole thing in motion.
Yeah.
Otherwise, forever is forever.
Yeah.
It was not the black movement also was not all peaceful. Black power movement, people with large numbers of guns out there, black people defending their first set, led to some bad situations, but I think it was also effective. totally non-violent. And I don't know if you could expect that in India, probably not, in lower classes, but this is a different situation in this country. Yeah, I think you're right, but waiting, just simply waiting for a kind of evolution of society.
Yeah.
Maybe not enough.
Well, may I comment on that? Evolution simply means change, but change only comes about with small groups like your group or any small group, maybe even just a couple of people, to do something and sit around and talk about it and then do some action. As Margaret Mead said, what's that Margaret Mead quote? She said, people should not say that one person cannot change the world. It's always just one person who has the idea first and then gathers, like throwing a stone in the water, and then gathers others to action. And sure, it takes a long time, but the movement occurs not by just sitting and waiting, but by doing. So I think that's our slight difference of opinion.
I have a question about population. You mentioned very high population density in India, and I think that's a serious concern. And that, of course, ensures that there's going to be a lot of poverty because they're really overpopulated as far as the carrying capacity of their land.
The poverty, and so, I'm afraid, is not going to go away very soon. The population, the growth of the population, where the world has only had a 2 billion population, now a few years ago was about 5, now it's a 7 billion. In 20 years, it's going to be 9 billion. And the world is not expanding. The world state is the same size and same resources.
Yeah.
So that population, it's just going to absorb no matter what we do.
No, in India, I understand the official government policy is to try to control that population and growth. But in the rural areas, I understand, and it's in the lower class and among the poor people, this is not working very well. Because that they tend to have large families in this area. What's the family size of the average fertility rate, for example, for a woman?
Yeah, they had before like 8 to 9 kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, now everybody has 1 or 2.
So
medium.
So
nobody
has.
My parents, like 30 years back, had 4. That was 30 years back is 4, like 60 years back is 10, now it is 2.
So is the government health and birth control involved?
Yeah, the government gives you,
yeah.
I think it's like $10. $10 is 500 rupees.
Mm-hmm.
Those who have 2 kids.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you have 3, you have no right to claim.
Yeah.
And,
no,
you have the, and you have the free cesarean.
Yes, it does. Sure.
Cesarean, or, you know, if you're supposed to have medical bills for the pregnancy, it's free.
This might be off topic, but I just want to learn more about India. Now, is the average Indian more of a nationalist, think of himself as an Indian, or part of a certain tribe in India?
I think they are
more tribal or more nationalist.
You mean, are they proper Indians?
Do they consider themselves more of a part of the state of India, or more of a part of a tribe that just happens to be in India?
Yeah, I think they were first like a tribe they started, culture-wise.
Yeah, but I found people to be more nationalist. They didn't really recognize your tribe. I didn't know any of the tribes or the children. They never talked about it. But there was, I found intense pride to be Indian in the country and the people and the culture that I found, where they didn't recognize their tribe. And in Apara, the caste system, or the tribes aren't even discussed. It's not...
Yeah, they are known as, like 1 week back, I just got an email from my friend. It's a January 27th, is a Republic Day of India, a Republic Day. So he sent me an email. So when I opened it, it was about like 10 pages telling me how Indians created the world. Just basically, you know, like he started telling his computer started by Indians, or anything. There is nobody from other country who started something, he said. But the facts are, he has written in such a way that everything is true. So they are, I think, basically from Indians. They don't have any mix-up.
I think we should give John a chance to say any concluding words.
Yeah. So I just want to conclude by just telling you one example of my childhood that I used to go to school with Dalit families, Dalit kids. So we never asked what caste you belong to, because teacher has got a record, you know. OC, BC, you know, OC is like a Brahmin caste, BC is the middle class which I belong to, SC is the schedule, Dalits. So he has a record. You should have a record of your caste there in the school. So I never asked anybody what caste they belong to, because in the childhood itself, I did not like that. Yeah. My grandma was very stubborn to keep, you know, to keep the distance, because, you know, they are all like traditional people. But I used to go to their house and eat or drink or anything, but when I come back, she used to, did you go and eat something there? With a question, no, I just went to do my, you know, the homework. So, yeah. So later on, I was eventually feeling that once this all changed, you know, then only I'll be happy here in the village. So I never went there. I used to just come for a holidays and stay there just for 5 or 10 days, and I go back to my boarding school because I was fed up of seeing the caste systems or anything. I really wanted them to, you know, forget about those things. If you are able to reach to the Dalits, or Dalits are able to reach you, that is a real growth. Yeah. So I had my friends, and I used to call them my sister, elder sister. I didn't have elder sister. Mm-hmm. So one of the girls I used to call elder sister. We used to eat together and those things.
Do you
yeah,
know what happened to any of those old friends?
Oh yeah, I think they are, yeah, they all married and all. Yeah, still I go to their house and all. And now my parents know that, okay, this guy is going to eat there. Get settled there. Yeah, they, no more question me actually, so they know that. Yeah. So I was happy to share. Thanks for giving a chance to me.